days ago, I mentioned to a friend that it felt to me like she was in a place of where the words mountain of joy came. And her response was, I think, typical of us. She said, yeah, you know, because we, meaning she and those around her, have all been through so much recently. Maybe now it's time that things will be easier, things will go well, or something like that. And I didn't have time in that moment to say that that's not at all what I meant. I didn't mean, I think now you're going to have like your turn to have an easy time. I meant that her capacity for life, her joy, was great. Had grown. And so this is a really simple thing. So it's simple enough that we can remember it and really feel our way into it and see where it leads. We keep thinking that things need to go well and be easy for us to be happy. And we don't. We can be happy. Period. So this gets all tricky and messy because then it's easy to think that when we're having a hard time and we don't feel happy, then we've missed the point of life and etc. But it even means that even when we're unhappy, we can be happy. So I have a few lines from Wendell Berry, as I almost always do this year. And one is a kind of a weird poem that I won't bother with reading the whole thing because it's not worth getting into the language. But he talks about how what he calls the sun of time, so like the sun in the sky, sun of time, so that kind of light on one side of a blade, a polished blade. And on the other, the never fading light. So two kinds of light, one that's with time and one that's without time. And he said, the blade that divides these lights mirrors both, is one. So he talks in other poems more beautifully and excessively, I think, about this, but time and eternity stand in the same day, which is now in time and forever now. How do we know? We know. We know we know. That was the line that I was getting to. How do we know? We know. We know we know. They only live who are the comforted, is how he ends the poem. It's quite a strange poem. But there's an image of a polished blade, so a thin, polished surface that shines with the sun of time on one side and some other kind of light that doesn't change, that doesn't come and go on the other side. And it divides them and mirrors them and is one thing. And he gives that image as the polished blade. The difference is a polished blade edgewise to the eye. So it's, if you don't understand the English, you can look at my hand. It's edgewise to the eye. So we can see both. We could say we're designed to see both or something like that. We can see both. And we are both and we are one. But I wanted to borrow his line, how do we know? We know. We know, we know. they only truly live who are the comforted. So it's kind of weird. He's giving this pretty intense image of a blade and the sun of time, the timeless, the never-fading light. It's almost medieval. And then he's using, he's kind of alluding to one of Jesus' sayings, they only truly live who are the comforted. So, in one of the Dharma talks that Jesus gave, he talks about being comforted. Having a blade edgewise to the eye and being comforted, it's a strange situation. How do we know? Time and eternity stand in the same day, which is now in time, and forever now. How do we know? I wanted to borrow that line about our capacity for joy. Because although our practice has been and our education has been to ignore our capacity for joy, to be blind to it as much as possible, and to focus on something else. Circumstances, what it is, what are the somethings that you focus on? But the main point is that it's a something to focus on. And that helps us find, by contrast, what is our capacity for joy. Like, it's not a something. And so we're so accustomed to focusing on something. And it does work, it does make us functionally blind to our capacity for joy. And so we do really have what feels like an intrinsic fear of joy. And we do have what really feels like a sense sometimes that if I would be happy, even when I don't have what I want or need, then I won't get what I need or want. If I would be happy when others aren't happy, then this is some kind of, we understand this to be some kind of crime. Not that we understand it, because we wouldn't almost even think about it. And not that we understand it, because it's a misunderstanding as well. But it could be worthwhile, like, feeling for your excuses an excuse is a word I'm using lightly for something that's a barrier, for something that's in your blood, but doesn't need to stay that way. So with respect for the power of what stops us from seeing and feeling that we know, and we know, that a human being has a capacity for joy, and that the joy is actually the nourishment. But when we let ourselves feel even the capacity, have you ever jumped into really, really cold water? Or not even edged your way in, quiet, like slowly? Like really cold. Glacial, let's say. Gangotri. So it's breathtaking. Also, it's so far beyond our understanding, because it's this breathtaking, shocking kind of feeling, but in the ordinary, for the most part. And so it really does not compute in our current system of thinking. Things that seem worthless, or worse than worthless, like that kind of thing where you say, you couldn't pay me to do that, or whatever, or you would have to pay me to do that, that kind of thing. And things that aren't already labeled with a little sign that reminds us of its value or purpose or whatever. Or there can be the joke that it has a label that has nothing to do with the reality of it. So a rock. And an unspecial rock. Rub us up against what we know. So here's Wendell Berry again, and he starts this poem with, I know. I know for a while again the health of self-forgetfulness. Looking out at the sky through a notch, just a little dip, you can say, a little cut in the valley side. I know for a while again the health of self-forgetfulness, looking out at the sky through a notch in the valley side, the black woods wintry on the hills, small clouds at sunset passing across. And I know that this is one of the thresholds between earth and heaven from which even I may step forth from myself and be free. So, when he's got the even I may step forth. Any question about the English in the poem? So just checking out it, hopefully with curiosity and a huge sense of humor, our relationship to this possibility of being happy. Way to, and we can track how we're doing. Isn't that correct? partly know how I'm doing because I can see how you're doing, I think. I'm almost always wrong, of course. So it's that really funny thing. If you've been on retreats, you might have heard. It's really funny. People will come usually on their first retreat, their first time in silence, and they see everyone with their eyes closed, and they see everyone in silence. And they either are sure that everyone else is enlightened already, and they're just enjoying sort of floating on their cloud, or that everyone is having a really bad time. Otherwise, why would they be so silent? And so it's a kind of, again and again during the day, to just throw away as completely irrelevant most of our thinking. To just take the whole frame, like in the garden, we're taking out things that have gone to seed that we don't need to have in the garden. Just the whole thing out to go around a tree or to the horses. There's not anything to save back from there. Most of the time. But it's not with that aggression where we would take everything out of the garden because it's so messy, just get rid of it all and we'll start over again. It's also not that, because there are things in the garden that we will cut back and they will keep giving food. We will keep the root system in. But most of the time, the keeping track mind we need to just many times a day, take the whole thing and throw it to the side. Find where to throw it. Horses, tree, compost pile. We're so competitive that we don't even recognize it as competition. Most of us. Which is just this essentially unfriendliness that we're used to living in. And it so doesn't suit us. It's a bitterness in the blood that doesn't suit us. Even I may step forth from this threshold of heaven and earth, so this place where there's the sun of time and there's the never-fading light reflected in one thing, which is our life, this moment, if you wish. So the brightness of that polished blade from the two sides. Really doesn't leave room for focusing on something in the way that we usually do, as an avoidance of our, let's say, emptiness or capacity for joy. Our readiness to live. So even I may step forth from this threshold, from this place that's not two, not one. Into a happiness that's not divided against itself, that's not because of some reason. So it's not the, yeah, we have this, this is tricky, our entrance into spirituality day by day. It's tricky in that the kind of challenge that we would recognize and accept maybe, or let's say recognize, is mostly that kind of challenge that's something the ego can get its kind of arms around. It's for me, it's about me, it's because of me, that kind of thing. And that so isn't the challenge. So it's not that there's not a challenge, but we do need to, a big part of our process is letting go of the challenges that we thought of. Pushing myself through this difficulty, or supporting myself through that difficulty, or getting over this or that. Trying. But it obviously isn't just about not trying at all. It's about revolutionizing what trying means and letting it all go way deeper. And so that even I that can and does step forth into happiness that's undivided. You know, and enjoys the coolness or the warmth of the rock or whatever, for example. Let's life touch you. Let's you touch life. It's in one way so exceedingly humble, we can't imagine. So if we can have a conversation with that part of ourself that would be like, me? Who, me? And be very patient there, and be maybe way less patient with the part that wants to sort of get a stranglehold on your life, your practice, your trying, your fixing, your improving. And so it's hard because it's so different from what is really revolutionizing our way of thinking and living. That there could be every day a sense of it could be for me happiness, even though I may be in a terrible mood or whatever right now. Even I. And to feel then how different that is from the desperation to get. And desperation can be really useful, so don't think that all is lost when you feel desperate. It can be the most useful moment of your life. But just be really, really desperate. don't torture yourself with being mostly desperate. Be like 100% desperate. It's such a torture when we're sort of desperate but not letting ourselves be, thinking that we shouldn't be and that we should know the way out of it when clearly we don't. And that maybe that's finally the opening that we know we don't know. Then that helps us feel what's left that we know we know. What we know we know is so gentle and inspiring and unassuming and coming from the back. Hill by the in Galilee, that one of blessed are I can't remember, I may have to look it up, but the what does anyone know it? Blessed are those it's not coming. You know the one I mean? I'll find it and read it. It's beautiful. It's weird also. Some of the contrast that he gives. It makes me wish I knew the original language because it's probably really important, the contrast, but with the right word. But it's sort of, I think it was the same talk where he said, the first shall be last, last shall be first. But it's like, blessed are they who are persecuted in my name, for they shall be comforted. I think that's the one that that's actually here. Blessed are they who mourn, for they shall be comforted, maybe. Yeah. Blessed are they who, like, those who, where they seem to be in a situation that's poor. It's the blessing in that, which is sort of that, is what fits today. What we assume to be poor. Not as a rule, like, not then seeking out poverty. When we're driven by a sense of lack and driven towards what we think of, what we construe as not lack, we're dominated by, our whole system is filled, infused with the sense of lack. And so sometimes it happens when we let just the feeling of the stone, you know, or the ground or the air, something really, really simple that isn't labeled like special, but it gets us, kind of, it gets in or brings us out, then it helps us be out of our system of not enough, the system of trying to get, the system of thinking I'm not allowed to be happy unless I get what I think I'm supposed to have, etc. Well, it's you know, in the Buddha's language, it's the cause of suffering. I mean, the way that the teachings came down to us from that tradition, they talk about the word is thirst, tanha. It's usually translated as craving. craving, which to me gets wrongly translated in my system, and I think in most of our systems, craving. What Gautama describes that feeling as is a feeling of being in debt, which is not having, owing. Like, I don't have enough. I had to even get it from somewhere else, and now I owe that person. So when I'm using these more modern words like not enoughness or a sense of lack, and you say, yeah, I really recognize that, yeah. It's the basis of the system of suffering to be driven by that. And it's not only now in the consumer society, etc., where that's so much played out outwardly. It's also somehow all along, let's say, or as long as at least the last few thousand years. And the importance of knowing that it doesn't have to be dominant. So there's the discovery of not enoughness or the sense of lack being underneath everything that we're doing. And then that helps the discovery of, it's not actually the deepest layer. It's not actually all there is. It's crazy how much it moves us, how much we are moved by a sense of lack. That is really hard to register. That's the kind of challenge that it's not, like, the ego would like to mentally dominate that idea. I got it. Now I understand. But the actual decomposition that happens in realizing how much of our movement is from a place of not enough is there needs to be a kind of a basis of calm and a sense of being loved and a familiarity with gentleness for that process to continue to the end. And that is all very possible to do for the time. It's definitely accessible. And when we start to feel the difference between being decomposed, that the system of lack is getting less and less of a hold on us, on our lives. There's physical deconstruction that happens, etc. It's not only like a click in the mind, and it can feel just really awful sometimes. It can feel really wonderful sometimes, etc. But it's a whole-hearted, whole-body process. That's one way of describing the difference between what the ego would see as a challenge and it would want to dominate that, and what the actual challenge is like. To be deconstructed, to be literally, to have what we thought we were no longer be present. And so that's why there's the importance of developing here and there, where it comes naturally, preferably, like a sense of connection and stability and loving and being loved. So that the process can happen very, very naturally, which is very possible. But then the ego that wants to have its little challenge for itself to feel, you know, that it exists and so on, would want to hurry, for example. It wouldn't want to accept the possibility that, maybe in 20 years, maybe in 20 lifetimes, the process will be complete. But in the process itself, there's not a sense of hurry. It's a very natural feeling. Once we get used to how awful it feels sometimes to have where things were, let's say, knotted together and then that comes apart, it feels disgusting. And to know that's part of the process and nothing wrong. To know when there's a feeling of poison in the body, it's not necessarily that you've eaten something wrong, but that maybe something has released. And drink plenty of water and so on. Rest and eat well. So, but also, I wanted to find one more poem that there's a bit more just the beauty of other than seeing the difficulty, it's just these moments. Yeah, it's not going to be funny. It's allowing the moments of openness and enjoying, like, leaving room for that joy. It's not a small thing. And accepting that it's actually an earthquake in a way, like that kind of shock, like jumping into really glacially cold water. Of all.